morning, good afternoon, and good evening. You are listening to the Revolution Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Wright, co-author at scdlifestyle.com. And if you don't know, this episode of RHR is brought to you by 14.4.me. If you're starting out this new year, you're not sleeping correctly, maybe you're carrying a little extra weight from the holidays, a little acid reflux from all the stress, 14.4.me might be the program for you. In this program, it's a 14-day lifestyle reset, diet reset, movement reset, and stress reset program that Chris has put together where you're actually hand-holding, and it's much simpler than that long line that I just put together to try to tell you about this course. It's actually pretty simple, and it really helps with integrating new healthy habits and sort of changing around your health. So if you haven't, go check out 14.4.me and check out the program that Chris has put together. So moving on to the podcast, Chris Kresser, you are the integrative medical practitioner, healthy skeptic, and New York Times best-selling author. Welcome.
Hey, Steve, how's it going?
I'm enjoying my day today.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You might have had a couple extra cups of coffee.
I am coffee-free.
Are you just high on life?
I'm high on life and maybe a little bit of spearmint green tea that I just chugged.
Hey, you can't, you know, if that's your vice, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, man, I got into the teas. I got all these cool, like, turmeric ginger ones and yerba mates.
Yep.
Just playing around with them.
Have you tried puer?
I do have a little bit of it.
Yeah. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, one packet tastes like licking the ground.
Dirt. And
yeah, the other one tastes pretty delicious. So yeah.
You have to like the bitter taste to go for puer, but I found that it has a really kind of mentally clarifying effect without giving me the jitters, which I can get if I have too much caffeine. And that's actually relevant to the topic that we're going to be talking about today. But it's fun. I've been a tea connoisseur for a long time. And we actually have a store down in Berkeley that's just the entire store is devoted to tea. And you can go and they have a tea bar and you can sit there and sample tea. Each tea has the proper method of preparation and the proper water temperature and amount of time it should steep. It's really cool. It's like they don't do the full tea ceremony experience, but they do the, you know, at least part of the ritual. And that's part of what I like about it.
Yeah, that's basically what I asked for Christmas from all my family and friends was like, give me some different cool loose leaf teas. And then I had the kettle, but I needed the rest of the apparatuses. So
yeah. Yeah. Do you have a programmable kettle where you can dial in the temperature and...
Oh no, this is the next level.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I have that for making coffee and tea because I've gotten pretty into coffee too with like the pour over method and I have a burr grinder and I have a kettle with a special pour spout and it's programmable so you can like dial in 205 degrees and then press the hold button and it just, you know, brings it to 205 and then it holds it there. If you're doing something else, you can come back. And you know, different teas like black tea, you steep at a higher temperature and then the white, the green tea lower and then the white teas even lower still. So it's a whole new world, Steve.
Oh man. Well, I've been doing the AeroPress and the hand grind for coffee for a long time.
Yeah. I just stepped it up from that. I was doing that AeroPress and the home burr grinder, the hand one, and I'm now using the Kalita Wave. It's a pour over filter.
Cool.
It's Japanese. Almost all the good coffee tools are. And then I finally broke down and got the electric burr grinder for home just to speed things up a bit. And then there's this amazing coffee store in downtown Berkeley. Right in the same place as this tea store called Artis, and they roast right on the spot. So like you order coffee and they will literally just roast it right in front of you, give it to you. And it's so fresh that I actually recommend you wait for a couple of days before you consume it. But they've got all kinds of, you know, organic and fair trade varieties, and they have a coffee tasting bar and they do classes on how to do the pour over method correctly, and they have like little handouts that they give for each brewing device, like the Kalita Wave or the AeroPress. I can see we might need to do an episode on coffee and tea making.
We could.
This isn't the intended topic, but I can see there's a lot to say and people might have questions.
They might. They might want to know about Ethiopian coffees and lots of other fun coffees.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Without further ado, we've since moved our podcast recording time to a little later in the afternoon. So Chris, what did you have for lunch today?
So Elan, my wife, made a really delicious kind of chicken curry dish in the slow cooker last night. And so I had that and I had some salad and a little bit of white rice with the chicken curry. So that was it. Steve, we were trying to figure out why my video looks like somebody just painted light gray over my entire situation here. And I think it might be the time of day. You know, we usually do this in the morning and the sun is in a different position coming through the window, and it's very bright and sunny outside, but it the sun's kind of behind a tree right now. So that's why I look like I'm
very serious right now, your business
life. Yeah, cold and serious. Anyhow, let's we got a really good topic for the show here. This question is from Julia, and let's give it a listen.
Hi, Chris. I recently started working on my PhD and my life evolves around reading, learning, and memorizing. I already follow your personal paleo code guidelines, but considering how heavy the mental workload currently is, I was wondering if you had any specific advice on how to modify diet to enhance cognitive function, any tips on what to eat and possible supplements to take to help with focus and memory? Thanks.
Okay, so this is a great question, one that's near and dear to my heart. Or brain, I should say. I mean, it's something I think a lot about because we all use our brain intensively, but I do a lot of reading, learning, and memorizing. Maybe not so much memorizing now, but reading and learning and writing and synthesizing and researching and that's pretty much how I spend my days.
It's not taking barista classes and
yeah, that's what I do in my spare time.
Oh, okay.
I'm an aspiring barista, Steve. One day you're gonna walk into a Starbucks and see me behind the counter there.
I knew it.
Let's hope not. Nothing against baristas, but I think I'm not really cut out for that work. I don't have the patience for it. Okay, so let's see. Brain health. We could spend so many episodes on this, but I think I just want to stay really focused on what Julia was asking about, and so we'll consider basic and therapeutic nutrients to optimize brain health, and then at the end I'll talk a little bit about some other things you can think about if you're trying to optimize your brain health, and I'll kind of maybe direct you to some resources where you can learn more about those things if you haven't been listening to this show for a while or reading my blog for a while or my book. So let's first just talk about diet and particularly macronutrients before we dive into micronutrients.
And before you get too deep, Chris, I just want to remind the listeners that this podcast is for you, created by you, as evidenced by the question today. So go to chriskresser.com/podcast question to send us your question, and we'll make sure to get the show out about your question soon.
Thanks, Steve. It's amazing to see how all the questions come in and how they break down, and it really helps me to organize my research. So definitely keep them coming. So with diet, usually the first thing people ask is, what about carbs? Like what should I be on, a really low carb, high fat approach, like even a ketogenic diet to optimize my brain health, or should I maybe eat more carbohydrates? And of course, as usual, the answer is it depends. I think most people just generally, if you're overall relatively healthy, you don't have any significant metabolic problems, you're not dealing with a neurodegenerative condition like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or neuropathy or something like that, then a moderate carbohydrate diet somewhere within the 20 to 30% of calories is carbohydrate range will tend to work best. Really low carb approach can sometimes be helpful on a temporary basis. Like if you have an exam coming up, some people feel better if they eat, you know, let's say you have an exam at 11 o'clock in the morning, you might do better if you have a relatively low carb, higher protein, higher fat breakfast that morning. And then some people feel like that gives them kind of a temporary boost in mental clarity. But I would say most of my patients, most people I've worked with, find that if they stick with that diet over a long term, it eventually kind of starts to have the opposite effect, starts to sap their energy and ability to retain information and just stay focused and concentrated over a longer period of time. On the other hand, if you do have any of the conditions that I mentioned, metabolic issues or neurodegenerative disorders or a tendency in any of those directions, you might actually do better with a low carb, high fat diet or even a ketogenic approach. And certainly, as we've talked about on the show and then as I've written about on the blog, those approaches are being used successfully therapeutically in many of those conditions that I just mentioned, because the brain can utilize ketones for fuel when carbohydrate metabolism in the brain is damaged and not working well. So this is just yet another case where we need to distinguish between an approach that's appropriate and useful therapeutically and one that is like the basic recommendation for everyone. They're not the same thing. So, you know, at the end of the day, the best thing to do is just experiment a little bit. Try several days with a much lower carb, higher fat approach, see how that affects your cognitive function, and then go back to a more moderate carbohydrate approach. Try that for a few days and then actually boost the carbs up a bit and see where you feel best in that spectrum, because ultimately your body is going to be the guide.
Yeah, another thing to mention might be the timing in which you decide to eat those carbs. Some people like myself are much more morning people. Like my brain is on already in the morning. And so sometimes I will actually eat most of my carbs at dinner just because I actually do better with just a really like maybe just a banana or a small apple or something and then a bunch of protein and fat in the morning and throughout lunch. So you could always mess with the timing too based on if you're a night owl or a morning person.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mentioned that in the book and provide a few different scenarios as well. We'll come back to that at the end. Okay. So now for micronutrients to optimize brain health. First one is DHA. That's a long chain omega-3 fat. It's a fundamental building block of the brain, and it's a critical nutrient for brain cell function. It improves the fluidity of brain cell membranes. It supports the growth of the connective structures in the brain. It improves the ability to release neurotransmitters. It enhances communication between the neurons. So, and a significant percentage of the dry weight of the brain is fat and is DHA. So it's very, very important fat for the brain. And that's why when you look at studies of fetal development you see that if mothers who don't get enough DHA, that directly affects the brain function and even intelligence of their babies. So very important nutrient. And of course, you can get it in cold water, fatty fish, and shellfish. That's the primary source of DHA in the diet. It's not really found in any other food that we can consume other than algae, although I don't know that many people who consume algae. You can consume plant-based forms of omega-3, but the conversion of those plant-based forms into DHA is less than 0.5%, which is, and that's a best case scenario. So you really have to get it from fish or seafood or from fish oil, cod liver oil. Even if you're getting enough DHA in your diet, you may find that higher doses of DHA, you know, from supplements might be useful for shorter periods of time if you really need to, you know, optimize your brain function. If you're studying for a big exam, or in Julia's case, if she's preparing for a dissertation or something like that, you know, it's not something I recommend over the long term, but doing that for short periods of time can certainly be helpful. The next one would be vitamin B12, and I've written and talked a lot about this. It's a really, really crucial nutrient for humans. And it's really kind of one of the main reasons that I think humans need to eat meat and or shellfish, because, and that meat and shellfish probably played a significant role in our evolution, because we require B12, and it's not found in its actual form in any plant foods. B12 plays a crucial role in the function of the brain and the nervous system. It's a cofactor for methylation, which turns on and off genes. It also impacts the metabolism of several different neurotransmitters, and it plays a major role in providing cofactors for myelin, which is the protective sheath around the nerves. So if you think of your brain as like a tangle of wires, which is one way to think about it, imagine what would happen if those wires didn't have any insulation around them. And so myelin is just absolutely crucial for the function of the nervous system and the brain. I've talked a lot about B12 deficiency. It's a pretty involved topic, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here. If you want to learn more about it, just Google Chris Kresser B12 deficiency and you'll see the articles there. But the takeaway is this: it's a lot more common than people realize. Up to 40% of people between the ages of 25 and 83 have low B12 that's in the low normal range, and we're talking about serum testing. And what we know is that serum B12 is often one of the last markers to go out of whack when B12 is deficient. There are more sensitive markers like methylmalonic acid and holotranscobalamin that will be out of range before serum B12 is. So if 40% of people are in the low normal range for serum B12, then that suggests that a higher percentage of people or a similar percentage of people might actually be deficient or in the early stages of deficiency. So B12 is found in organ meats and in red meat and some shellfish. You can also supplement with it. The form that's best to supplement is generally the more active forms, like a hydroxy or methylcobalamin or adenosylcobalamin. That's also a pretty involved topic because we start to get into methylation and genetic mutations that affect which form of B12 might be best for you. I think we talked about those a little bit on the show we did about methylation, so you can refer to that. But you know, for a lot of people, taking 400 micrograms of methylcobalamin or something like that is a pretty safe bet. It's non-toxic even at high doses. It's water-soluble vitamin, so it's not really dangerous to take at that level.
For those methylcobalamins, do you like any sublinguals or sprays over the pill forms?
Yeah, I mean, depending on your absorption, right? Like if you don't have any significant gut issues, the pills are probably fine. But if you have SIBO or other gut issues, sublingual forms or liposomal forms are going to work better for sure. B6, while we're on the subject of methylation-related nutrients and nutrients that affect brain function, B6 and folate also have positive effects on memory and cognitive performance, and they're both cofactors in methylation process as well. So folate is found in dark leafy greens and in chicken liver primarily, and then in lentils. And B6 is found in sunflower seeds, fish, chicken and turkey, beef, and avocados. It's a little easier to come by in the diet, but deficiency or functional deficiency is still somewhat common. I see it all the time in my practice. SIBO is a major risk factor for B vitamin deficiency because a bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine will impair the absorption of those B vitamins. So we run tons of urine organic acid tests in our clinic on patients, and the ones with SIBO almost always have B vitamin deficiency. And as you know, Steve, SIBO is shockingly common. So it's a problem that affects a lot of people.
Yeah, the one thing I also wanted to ask you about, Chris, and you might be circling around to this later, but if it's here for me in my head, if somebody's under pressure to finish a project or complete a dissertation, the stress levels are going to be a little bit higher than normal. Would they want to think about doubling up on supplementation or doubling up on their organ meat consumption to get these B vitamins to help out with the stress hormones?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this is kind of a situation where if you, for just optimizing generally throughout the next period of years that Julia is doing her PhD, most of this stuff could be obtained through diet. But then during times where the heat is on, you know, like preparing for an exam or the dissertation or whatever, that's when, you know, maybe supplementing in addition to getting all these nutrients from diet, can be useful. Choline has been shown to improve cognitive performance and memory and protect against neurotoxicity, and that's found primarily in egg yolks and liver. Very important nutrient. It plays an important role in liver function, liver detoxification. It also balances the effects of methionine, which is an amino acid found in the leaner forms of protein. So very important nutrient, not just for brain function, but for overall health. Iron, of course, is required for adequate oxygen deliverability to the brain. And, you know, the brain needs two things to function properly more than anything else, and that's oxygen and glucose or ketones. So iron deficiency is a huge problem around the world. It affects 2 billion people worldwide. It's less common in the U.S., but it's still a major problem, especially with women. So making sure you're eating enough organ meats and red meat and oysters and clams, which are the major sources of heme-based iron, is important. Heme iron is the form of iron that's found in animal products, and it's much, much better absorbed than plant-based forms of iron. So that's important to understand. And then vitamin D is, you know, it seems to just turn up in any discussion about nutrients that are important for X or Y or Z. It turns out vitamin D plays an important role for preserving cognitive function, particularly as we age, and vitamin D, low vitamin D levels are associated with cognitive issues in the elderly. So another reason to keep your vitamin D levels in an optimal range, which for me is about 25 or 30 to about 55, somewhere in that range. So those are, you know, like the basic nutrients that are obtainable through healthy diet, nutrient-dense diet. But then we can talk a little bit about therapeutic nutrients, which, you know, may not be things that you eat so much in your diet, but you can supplement. I mean, they some of them do occur in the diet, but others are supplements that you would add to your routine. There are so many different supplements that affect brain function, as I'm sure you know, if you fire up the internet or TV or whatever, or magazine, you're going to see promises of all kinds of supplements that will, you know, turn you into a genius. But some of the better ones that I've found in my work with patients and in my own experience, one would be curcumin. Curcumin really has several remarkable effects on the brain. It protects brains from oxidative stress. It's anti-inflammatory and improves memory, and it protects against neurodegeneration and neurotoxicity. It also has some pretty profound immune benefits. It promotes T regulatory cell production, which is the T regs really help balance and regulate immune health. So the dosage would be maybe 400 to 600 milligrams per day, and some forms are better absorbed than others. So that's something to pay attention to. Acetyl L-carnitine stimulates energy production in brain cells, especially in the frontal cortex, and it protects brain cells and even can help regenerate them, which is amazing. And the dosage for that would be like 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day in divided doses. And we have phosphatidylserine, which is found in every cell membrane, but it's especially prevalent in the brain. And that determines what nutrients can enter the brain cells, how waste gets out of the brain cells, how brain cells communicate. And some studies, though not all, have shown that it can improve memory, learning, concentration, and mood. And the dose for that would be 100 to 300 milligrams per day in divided doses. And then last is an herb, traditional Ayurvedic herb called bacopa. And this has been used to boost memory and cognitive performance and to reduce anxiety in Ayurvedic medicine for thousands of years. And modern studies have shown that it improves attention, memory, and several other measures of cognitive performance. So the dose for that would be about 200 to 600 milligrams per day. Now, when I wrote my book, which is now out in paperback as The Paleo Cure, it was published in hardcovers, Your Personal Paleo Code. I wrote several bonus chapters for how to tweak and customize paleo diet and lifestyle for particular health conditions. And one of the bonus chapters was on cognitive performance, anxiety, and depression. So if you have the book, you can log into the website and download this bonus chapter. If you don't have the book, you can purchase the book and then get access to these bonus chapters for free. And then what I also did is I created packs of supplements for each of these conditions based on the recommendations that I make in the bonus chapters, because I know there's a ton of confusion out there about, you know, which products are the better ones, which ingredients you should get, what form you should take the nutrients in, and all of that. So I wanted to just make it easy for people to and provide recommendation on products that I would use based on all these nutrients that I'm recommending. So if you go to store.chriscresser.com, there's a little orange box there that says, or green box that says, I read Chris's book and I know what I'm looking for. And if you click on that, and then you just click on the cognitive collection, there's a few supplements that have all the nutrients that I've talked about in the show here to make it easy for you.
Yeah, I'd like to second the acetyl L-carnitine for sure. Actually stack that with ubiquinol, the reduced form of CoQ10.
Yeah.
And I found that if I really want to rock it out in the morning, like 200 milligrams of ubiquinol twice, you know, morning and noon with the acetyl L-carnitine and some curcumin, that's my go-to.
Cool. Yeah. It's interesting how different it is, you know. Some people have absolutely no response to CoQ10, whereas other people, it's really like turning the lights on. So it goes back to this whole biochemical individuality principle that we're always hammering on here. So just a couple other considerations to think about with brain health. One would be the gut-brain axis, something we've talked a lot about and I've written about. So if you search for Chris Kresser gut brain axis, you'll find some podcasts and some articles to read. The quick summary is that there's a profound connection between the gut and the brain that works in both directions. And so if you want to optimize your brain health, you really have to optimize your gut health. You could take all these other supplements we're talking about, and if you've got SIBO or leaky gut or any other of conditions that can affect digestive health, then these are going to have limited impact and value. So optimizing that entire axis is really important. Another would be exercise. If you're preparing for studying a PhD, Julia, usually that means spending a lot of time on your butt, reading and writing and researching and all of that. So I would definitely investigate something like a standing desk, or if you really want to go for it, a treadmill desk. That, for me, that made just an unbelievable difference when I was writing my book. I'm sure a lot of people know this story, but when I first started writing my book, after a couple of weeks of just sitting in my chair, reading and researching and writing, I was like, this is going to kill me. Or shave a few years off my life. And that's when I first got the treadmill desk. And then in the course of writing my book, I ended up walking over 2,000 miles. So writing became an extremely healthy, energizing experience instead of something that drained me. And we know that sitting less is as important, or possibly even more important than getting enough exercise throughout the week. So make sure you're breaking up those sitting periods with standing and walking periods, and then make sure you're getting enough exercise as well, because that's absolutely crucial for cognitive performance. Steve mentioned stress earlier in the show, and managing stress is vital as well. When you're doing a PhD, there's a lot of that. And things like mindfulness-based stress reduction and meditation are, you know, numerous studies show how powerful they can be in terms of affecting cognitive performance, focus, memory, etc. I find my meditation practice is probably the single most important thing in terms of determining my daily ability to focus and produce. Diet is right up there, and maybe they're tied for first, but they're both really, really vital. So in 14.4, I provide exercise, a whole routine that you can follow along with, just at home body weight techniques or stuff you can do even when you're traveling on the road. But I also have stress management audios and videos. So I have guided meditations, I have mindfulness-based stress reduction guided programs, I have some Qigong. I find Qigong to be really helpful for cognitive performance as well, because it's like a moving meditation. It You get the same kind of benefits in terms of awareness and focus and concentration, but you're also moving, especially when your mind is really busy and you've been using your brain a lot. I find that to be really restorative and rejuvenating. And then, of course, we can't talk about cognitive performance without talking about sleep.
I knew it.
Yeah, you knew it. Yeah, I mean, everybody listening to the show knows how sleep affects cognitive performance. All you have to do is, you know, sleep poorly one night and just in the next day, you see how much your brain function torpedoes. It's vital, and ironically, sleep's one of the first things that suffers when we get stressed or busy or when we've got a lot of work to do. So, you know, setting up your schedule in such a way that ensures you're getting enough sleep, Julia, is really going to serve you well during the time that you're doing this PhD. So there's probably a lot more we could say about this topic, but I think these are the really key suggestions, and I hope they're helpful to you, and good luck with your PhD.
Yeah, I think this is going to help a lot of people, and it sounds like we just stumbled on two new topics for shows, teas and coffees and performance and productivity. So
sounds good.
We'll have to continue with that. Just another reminder to send your questions into chriskresser.com/podcast question. And in the meantime, if you're wondering about, you know, maybe what meditation Chris is using or what research he's reading, he's going to be posting that stuff on his social media typically. So if you're not following him on your favorite social media outlet, you know, you're definitely going to want to do that, specifically facebook.com/ChrisKresserLAC and twitter.com/ChrisKresser.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening. See you next time.